All right, good morning. We are in the station here with Brian Collins, OPP whistleblower. We've been following his case for a while now. Do you remember the last time you were back on the show, Brian?
I'm sorry?
Do you know?
Question the last time.
Do you remember the last time you were on the show, on W2L?
Yes, much better. Certainly. It has been a while since I was last on the show. And during that time, of course, I believe our case had been filed, but we had not actually gone through any of the preliminaries or any of the motions in the hearings. And allow me to preface our conversation, Kazia, by saying I am extraordinarily grateful to WTUL, to you and the other hosts, as well as your listening audience, for sustaining a level of interest in this matter, not only because of the case itself, but because of the overarching importance that this particular case could have and still may have for the progress of Orleans Parish Sheriff's Office and its jail, and therefore the city as a whole.
Let's let the people know who might not be familiar with the case, just to quickly recap how you got to this point.
Well, just quickly, this case was centered around retaliatory actions that was taken by the Orleans Parish Sheriff and his agency against me directly because I chose to exercise my moral imperative by exposing what had been a very long, ongoing, systematic abuse of the inmate population, and equally important, you know, a long, ongoing, and systematic neglect of the law, right? So when I decided to speak publicly on some of the things that I observed and frankly to cooperate with other competent and interested parties who were in the process of effecting change, either through the consent decree or other, you know, suits and litigation, when that was discovered by OPSO, once again, they went about their tactics of intimidation. And I eventually wound up resigning under coercion and as a result filed a federal complaint and thus the lawsuit. So that's pretty much a summary of how we got to the point of the lawsuit.
And what was the suit exactly? What were you charging?
Well, certainly I was charging that the agency and its sheriff exercised violations or took actions that were in violation of my civil rights, of my First Amendment right to speak openly and freely about matters that were of grave public concern, right? Conversation and information and communication that was given by me are presented by me as a private citizen and not as an employee of the agency. And more importantly, the agency during the time that they were implementing their actions against me, they made certain threats, right, such as I would never work in law enforcement again, and that I would be on an island by myself, and boy, here's one, whoever it is that exposed this information will learn that what happens in here, meaning behind the walls, the impenetrable walls of the jail, stays in here. And to me, that was a very, very compelling threat. And unfortunately, it seems that it wasn't just a threat, but it, through the decision of Judge Sarah Vance, has come through fruition. So,
Right, and we'll get to that in a second. But I guess I still want to, if you could speak a little bit about how you came to that decision that what you were seeing and what you're experiencing in the jail was of grave public concern. What really was the decision point there?
Well, the tipping point for me was it was a gradual culmination of feelings of guilt, mediocrity, and defiance, frankly, of my oath of office. I was a commissioned deputy. I wasn't just a regular jailer, right? So therefore, as a commissioned peace officer, I swore, as others do, to uphold the laws and the constitutional laws of the state of Louisiana as well as of the United States of America, right? And those are criminal laws. And as such, as in making that oath of office and swearing, I am committing to the citizenry and I'm committing to the public that you can count on me, right, Deputy Collins, to do the right thing and to make good, conscientious, ethical, and moral decisions based on the law. But what I found was that within the Orleans Parish Sheriff's Office system, there was very little regard for the law, meaning that, you know, we would witness commissions of actual criminal offenses, not jailhouse rule breaking, stuff like that, but assaults, batteries, sexual assaults, all manner of criminal activity. As a sworn deputy, I am supposed to take action on that, which I did, submitting reports and things of that sort. But the reports would all disappear, get misplaced, and there was no repercussion for the inmate population. So after seeing that, and of course after witnessing an inmate almost lose his life by being stabbed over 20 some odd times, right, and nothing being done at that point, but I actually acknowledge the mechanisms of the usual cover-up beginning to roll and to come into play, I decided that I couldn't stand for that. I wasn't going to stand for that because, you know, I was a direct witness to that particular gruesome assault on this particular individual, and I could not in good conscience allow that to go unaddressed. So ultimately, in that matter, that was sort of the tipping point for me to say enough is enough, and I would go outside of the agency after staying internal for so long and having nothing done. And, you know, the other catalyst for that photo and me speaking out publicly about that matter in particular was when the agency, through its sheriff, came out with an official statement alleging that the injuries to this particular individual, who, keep in mind, we're not talking about convicts per se, we're talking about people, young men, in some instances young women, that are simply being detained until they get their day in court, right? But when the sheriff came out with his official statement that it was nothing serious, it was superficial scratches, he was only sent to the hospital in an abundance of caution, I realized that that wasn't true. And unless something was done, that's how it would stay. It would just rest right there, that a young man nearly lost his life, but he was discounted to the point of being immaterial, right, because it was just superficial, and that was a lie. That was a lie, and I wasn't going to stand for that.
Wow. I mean, it's just quite a stand. And I guess my next question is just sort of like, from that point, how did you get to the point in the lawsuit?
Well, again, you know, from that point, my thinking was that, let's face it, you know, in a litigious society such as we live in, oftentimes nothing changes unless it is through litigation. And you have to keep in mind, too, and consider this, and I would ask your listening audience to consider this also. The Orleans Parish Sheriff's Department at the time of this attack had already been under investigation for a couple of years. The Department of Justice had already released a few very scathing and detailed reports about the lack of security and the lack of policies. And finally, in the consent decree and in Judge Lance Afric's opinion, he acknowledged that the jail for years had been existing under a cloud of deliberate indifference, right? So I figured that the only way to try and affect change from my angle as an individual that was aggrieved by the continuing and ongoing violations of these inmates' constitutional rights, which is one of their rights is protection, meaning the agency has a constitutional mandate to protect individuals from hurt and harm from not only others, but from themselves, and that wasn't happening, right? So I figured that by filing this lawsuit, you know, if and when we were to prevail, it would send a very strong message again that change must come, and it must come quickly. But as we can see, Kavya, change is not happening. Well, I can't say it's not happening, but it's been extraordinarily slow and nominal at best. And this is supported by some of the latest reports from the Federal Monitor, as well as the other interested and competent parties that are still very much and actively involved in enforcing the mandates of the consent decree. So that's how I came to filing the lawsuit. And let me clarify something, right? This, as far as I'm concerned, this lawsuit was truly not about money. I never set a monetary value on this lawsuit. The professionals that were representing me, they did. They evaluated it, but it really wasn't that important to me. What was important to me was prevailing in the court of law, whether it would have amounted to a dollar or a dime. Me personally, I was not concerned about that part of it. Yes, I suffered. Truly, I suffered economic distress. You know, I mean, I had to exhaust savings and everything just to survive for a period of time. But that was their intent all the while, right? And at this particular stage, again, you know, the judge, Sarah Vance, has issued her opinion. And that's where it stands at this particular point.
Yeah, so can you speak about that? What happened with the case, and what did Sarah Vance say?
Well, at this particular point, as we all know, Judge Sarah Vance has summarily dismissed the case, meaning, you know, she did not allow this to go to trial. Therefore, as a plaintiff, we were not allowed to present, as some would say, the meat and potatoes of our complaint. You know, the crux of our argument was never heard. You know, the opinion of Judge Vance, I found, I guess, somewhat peculiar because, you know, she used this esoteric measure or theory of the Pickering balance, which I prevailed, and she acknowledged as much in her opinion that, you know, on the point of me speaking as a private citizen, I prevailed. She acknowledged that. On the point of me speaking publicly regarding and disclosing a matter that was of grave public interest, I prevailed, right? And on the point of me being and suffering, should I say, adverse employment decisions, I prevailed. But at the end of the day, she found that all of these minor victories, those 3 points that I prevailed on, were overshadowed and overruled by, as she described, you know, a blatant violation of departmental policy, and that what I did caused disruption to the regular and ordinary course of business, if you will, or administration of the jail, and created a disruption and among the personnel of some sort. I couldn't quite comprehend where that was coming from, but at the end of the day, I think she acknowledged that I was violated, but She rested on the black ink printed on white paper called a departmental policy that is never, ever enforced. With me bringing a cell phone into the jail, that was a violation of policy. And speaking publicly without authorization was a violation of their policy. And those two reasons superseded, the damages that I suffered. So right now we are contemplating our next move, whether or not, we're going to appeal. We're spending or investing a lot of time looking at, other cases, at the appellate level. And, we'll make a determination in the coming days, if you will, as to whether or not we will be filing an appeal to Judge Sarah Vance's decision.
And was that decision, what was your reaction to it?
Can you repeat that?
What was your reaction to the decision?
Oh, boy. Yeah, man, good question. My reaction was not one of disappointment because on the front end, we knew that opposing a public law enforcement agency, even if it is an agency in name only, was going to be a very high hurdle, right? So it wasn't so much disappointment as much as it was frustration, right? And the frustration, Kazia, was born of, once again, what we knew the facts of this particular case to be, what we knew, the crux of what was going to be argued in at trial would be, and none of that was able to be heard because of this summary judgment. So it was more frustration than anything. And I believe that any of the citizens of New Orleans that are genuinely interested in transforming the Orleans Parish Sheriff's Department from what it is now into a legitimate and efficient and fair steward, right, of incarcerated people, they too would have been and are equally frustrated by this dismissal. So it was frustration more than anything else.
Yeah, and I guess just to speak a little more to, you spoke a bit about what your goals were when you first made the decision to speak up. And do you feel like any of those have been reached, or where do you feel like it's at now?
Well, you know what? This is, I believe, and I know that this is a process, right? And as with any process, it's not something that happens instantaneously or overnight. And it does involve a measure of endurance and a measure of strength and ability to continue on despite, the slight defeats and the hiccups and the curves in the road. But I do believe that not only have I contributed positively to some of the ongoing changes within at Orleans Parish Sheriff's Office, but others have contributed also. So, yeah, despite the judge's decision to summarily dismiss this case, I do think that that my actions, and I know, frankly, that my actions in combination with other courageous people have worked to contribute in a positive manner to changing the Orleans Parish Sheriff's Office. But at the end of the day, and ultimately, what really needs to occur is a absolute change, a deconstruction, if you will, then reconstruction of the leadership. Because as long as the existing leadership, and let me say this isn't a criticism, it's just a statement of fact, that is supported by history, pattern, and behavior, right? But the current leadership is just not up to the task. And as long as that's in place without any accountability for their inactions, we can expect, unfortunately, to continue to travel this very bumpy and arduous road to change. The new jail that has been pushed back, from month to month, that's not going to give us the relief that that we need. It really needs to come from leadership. And again, I am not so sure that the current leadership is capable of providing what needs to be provided in order to help us move forward with a good, safe, constitutionally managed jail. And that's just a fact. So.
Yeah, I mean, there's been a lot of evidence of that. I'm also curious, like, now that you've had experience kind of in a different branch of the criminal justice system as a whole, how you see those different systems connecting to each other and how the issues with the jail affect legal cases or police work.
Well, you know, and you are exactly correct in your assessment, and if I'm understanding your question, the entire complex of criminal justice is one that is and should be integrated, right? We do need to have a tightly woven fabric of competent and efficient agencies in order for us to effect fair and equitable justice. And what I see in my experience while I was there, and even now, what I see again is a continuous stress on that fabric, because at the end of the day, when you have inmates that are arrested, let's just say, for example, and quickly, arrested for the commission of a serious violent crime, such as murder, right? And these inmates are allowed to and do have and gain access to cell phones and dangerous weapons and other types of contraband, and there is no concerted effort to interrupt their access to these items, that is very problematic. I can't tell you how many times I, as a deputy, witnessed and reported to the appropriate so-called rank that inmates that were in very high-profile cases, be they drug conspiracy cases or even murder cases, you know, were using cell phones or had other types of illegal contraband, and nothing was ever done, right, except for, you know, a verbal response, okay, we'll take care of that. And who knows how many cases have been compromised because of that that access to those kinds of devices and what have you. And listen, don't misunderstand me, right? It's not that it is so rampant that everybody's walking around with contraband devices, but the bottom line is that when it is recognized, nothing was ever done about it. And I would dare say that by and large, it's still the same today. I still have sources that call and just tell me in a matter of conversation that, you know, these things are still continuing today. And again, that's a function of leadership, right, to intercede and to bring that to an end. And, you know, and it's just not happening. So to answer your question, I really don't see a wholesale, broad-scale change that we really need to have here in the city of New Orleans. Hopefully we will get it sooner than later. But as for now, seems to be business as usual.
Right. I'm also curious, and this might be a big question, but just how this whole experience has changed your perspective on your city, your fellow citizens, and then sort of the systems that are put in place to exert justice.
Can you repeat that question, Kazir?
I was just asking how this whole experience has changed you and changed your perspective on your city and its citizens.
Oh, well, hey, man. I am still fabulously optimistic about the city of New Orleans. Let's face it, I was born and reared here, and I lived a couple of other places, but always came back, right? And, you know, the city of New Orleans has a a very fascinating magnetism to it, and there is no other place like New Orleans, right? And it can certainly be a much better city. So as far as my perspective on the city changing, it hasn't changed. Again, I'm still very optimistic. I'm still very excited about the future of this city, right? However, I am not blinded, if you will, to the fact that some of our most important institutions really need to be re-engineered. And that is, I guess, in summary, how I feel about it. You know, just to give you a prime example, you know, after I left the Orleans Parish Sheriff's Office, I thought about what I wanted to do if I wanted to remain in law enforcement, and I said yes, because that was my commitment, that was my desire, that was my passion, to serve in a capacity of law enforcement, to be that first responder, right, to be the person that folks can count on. And after I left there, I went to NOPD, and I applied. And passed everything at the top, right? I wasn't one of these stragglers, man. I mean, my civil service scores were up there. You know, my what do they call it? The physical training assessment. Passed all of that, and then I waited, and I waited, and I waited, and I followed up with a certain investigator that was handling my jacket. And here we are, Kadia. Nearly a year after applying to NOPD, I have yet to receive a disposition, right? Meaning they haven't sent me any notifications at all, at all. And so I'm thinking, how curious is it that a law enforcement agency that is, you know, for the lack of a better term, desperate for qualified and motivated candidates does not take one when he's there to present it? You're advertising on the back of pizza boxes for police officers when you have one that is more than qualified, more than energized, and you won't call them. But you know what it reverted back to? It reverted in my mind back to the ominous threat that was made. You will never work in law enforcement again. So in my being, I do believe that that administrators from OPSO and NOPD, you know, got together and said, hey, listen, you know, guys are right. You know, if it weren't for the fact that he is too conscientious, we would hire him. And I think that is a very, very sad statement. Very sad statement.
Yeah, indeed. I mean,
that doesn't change my opinion of the city as a whole. I do believe that in time, and as more citizens become more activated, I'm not saying activist per se, but get involved, right? Get involved. Start demanding performance from your public officials, especially those in such important positions as police chief and sheriff and city council persons. Don't just sit idly by because you're comfortable in your own existence, right? You have to certainly consider the larger, broader picture, not just in the current or the short term, but also the long-term future for the city of New Orleans.
Right. Well said. And I guess, you know, if there's anything else you wanted to add before we close up.
Hey, man, the only thing else I would contribute to this conversation is, again, that I'm still very optimistic, you know, about the future of New Orleans, right? And, again, I would strongly, strongly urge and encourage everyone, young and old, accomplished or striving, educated or not, to strongly consider what your expectations are for your public citizens and for your public officials. And I tell you, man, when it comes down to the Orleans Parish Sheriff's Office and the jail that it administers, the bottom line is the expectation is that the jail be a constitutional environment, right? That we fall into compliance, or that they quickly be brought into compliance with CRIPA, and, you know, that they be brought into compliance with the mandates of the PREA Act and all the rest of that stuff, CRIPA being in the Constitution of Rights of Incarcerated Persons Act, and TRIA, of course, is the Prison Rape Elimination Act, which we know still happens. And just in summary, we also know what is not happening is none of these things are being done. Because what, just 2 weeks ago, you have a young man, I believe, Mr. Miller, that was permitted to commit suicide, to take his own life. And to me, as Judge Vance described my action of revealing a photo in contradiction to a public statement from a sheriff to be egregious, I find it equally egregious that an institution that is currently under a federal consent decree, where one of the major tenets and pillars of that consent decree was that they would provide for care, I mean, for safety and protection of inmates, still fails to do it. And the question is, who's accountable? Who is held accountable? Somebody should be held accountable, but we're not seeing that at this particular point. Hopefully we will very shortly. And, you know, just in closing, the Sheriff Marlon Guzman, you know, he released his statement claiming that he felt that my lawsuit was a political attack that failed. Allow me to clarify, right? I never entered the race for sheriff, never contemplated it. So it was not a politically motivated action. I mean, I'm not involved in politics. But however, what it was and the way it coincided with that electoral period, it was, in a sense, an opportunity for the voting public to really see a little bit more of what happens and what is happening and who's responsible, and hopefully they would make a right and proper election vote. And, you know, I can't say that they did. I can't say that they didn't. They elected who they elected. But, you know, politics is not my thing. And I think if a person is more focused on performance than they are politics, then the Orleans Parish Jail would be a better place today.
I remember there was one other thing from that letter you wrote that struck me, where you spoke, I think in the last line, about how prisoners are the most vulnerable population, or one of the most vulnerable populations. And I guess if you could just speak a few words to people who say, well, they're prisoners anyway, so their treatment isn't too much of their concern.
Yeah. Well, certainly, I would say that the top line view and the high line view and expectation of the way Orleans Parish Jail should be managed and ran is pretty much governed by the Constitution, right? Again, prisoners and incarcerated people have constitutional rights. That's the bird's eye view. But when you distill it down and you really scope into a microscopic level at the reality of the ground floor view, you will see that, yes, these inmates are the most vulnerable of anyone, free, meaning free citizens or not, because not only are they being contained, but they're being controlled. And if you're containing and controlling a person, then you should be caring for that person. And they're certainly not getting the care that they're expected and that they should receive. And again, I cannot overemphasize, and it cannot be overstressed, that the majority of the people in Orleans Parish Prison are pretrial detainees. They're not convicted rapists. They're not convicted murderers. They're not convicted armed robbers. They are, for the most part, pretrial detainees, regardless of their charge. So they haven't been found guilty of anything. You can be picked up for a speeding ticket, right, and find yourself incarcerated in Orleans Parish Jail. And as such, you should be entitled to a restful night's sleep instead of having to stand up all night with your back to the wall, afraid that you're going to be, you know, brutally assaulted or sexually assaulted, and nothing will be done about it. So they are the most vulnerable, right? You still have instances where deputies are using excessive force on that inmate population, but we never hear about it. You still have instances where inmate-on-inmate violence is entirely too high. The incidence of it is entirely too high, but we do not hear about it. And it's not just me speaking. This is something that was borne out in the latest hearing before Judge Afric, where the competent parties requested that the judge do something about Orleans Parish withholding of records. That was one of the mandates of the consent decree, that the monitor and the other competent parties would have unfettered access to all records, and they're not doing that. Why not? Why not? So, yeah, they are very vulnerable. And, you know, I also said that Judge Sarah Vance, who I'm sure, you know, she's a very extraordinary and brilliant jurist. They all are. They would not have ascended to the level that they're at. But at the same time, you know, her opinion and her decisions were circumscribed by, again, ink on paper. My decisions to act in the manner that I did were prescribed and compelled by blood on the floor. I saw too much of it, and I saw too little of anything being done about it. And if I had to do it again, guess what? I would, only it would be more, of it, really. I really feel that I should have and could have done more than I actually did.
Wow. Well, thank you so much for coming on. It's always a pleasure to talk to you and to stay updated with your case. And for all the listeners, they can hear the whole interview on WTLnews.tumblr.com.
All right, Kazir, well, again, thank you. And once again, I do want to offer my unceasing gratitude and thanks to all of your listeners, those that supported me through this, and even those that didn't for whatever reason, but stayed interested, right? Because that's what we need. We need to have people that do remain interested. And I thank you guys for all of the support.
All right. That was Brian Collins, OPSO whistleblower, whose case was recently